and Happy New Year, everyone. But the reality is, whether or not it is a new year or an old year, there are millions of people who are really suffering in this world when it comes to depression and anxiety. And in the United States, the statistics tell us that there are about 16 million adults. And I'm not exactly sure how they've come up with that statistic, but it really translates into about 1 in 5 Americans who are truly suffering from depression. And about 40 million adults are suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. And, you know, I think that the very, very best thing that we can all do when we find that we are on a never-ending merry-go-round ride or a roller coaster ride, and not a fun ride, and we've tried, we've exercised and we've meditated and we've tried to do all kinds of things on our own, and yet the depression, the anxiety, the substance abuse issues, the relationship issues continue to persist. So what do we do? You know, I was saying to my husband Jim this morning, you know, when people are renovating their houses, they go and they assess and they try to find out what the best contractor is going to be, what the best materials are going to be. And the fact is that we don't really need, and we shouldn't feel that we need to navigate this world on our own and our issues on our own. And I think a lot of people, when they think about therapy, they think, oh, I'm going to be in therapy for years and years. And it's true, there are some people who are going to be and who are going to require maintenance for years and years. But the majority of people are really looking for a second opinion, another perspective, so that they will be able to perhaps understand their family of origin issues better. Of course, understanding that we cannot change history at all. And yet, when it comes to early trauma, when it comes to family of origin issues where people were either emotionally abused or physically abused or sexually abused or verbally abused, the reality, of course, is that we can't change our history. And yet I have found that it is really, really helpful. And I would say that it is really essential that people find a way with help to emotionally work through what did and did not happen in their early lives. And it's not about forgetting. And it's not at all, in my view, about necessarily forgiving. But when you go through that process, finally, you are able, for the most part, not 100%, to be able to live in the moment without having one foot in the past. Change your behavior and change your mindset, and then everything is simply going to be okay. But I think that is not the reality, certainly not in my experience. And I've been practicing now as a psychotherapist and as a sex therapist for over 35 years. There is a need to go back. There is a need to understand and to process emotionally the traumas, the hopes, the dreams that were not realized. And then you're at a point then where you're really able to say, okay, now what? What do I need to do to really get myself going so that I can move forward? And, you know, as I was on the metro on the way to the Progressive Radio Network studio, you know, I was thinking, I don't want anybody to have the idea that change is something that is easy. It is not easy at all. In fact, there was an article in Psychology Today that I was reading over the weekend, and that researchers have identified and mapped out 5 stages of change, and they can be used as a kind of recovery regardless of what the issues are. And they talk about in the first stage. So we're talking about changing our behavior, losing weight, you know, improving our relationships, finding a relationship. So in the first stage, they call it pre-contemplation, where we're largely unaware exactly of what we need to do, but we are clear that maybe there's some things that we should be doing to get ourselves on track. So we may be pre-contemplating this for a very, very long time, hopefully not too long, because as I say to myself and I say to you every week, that time is moving along and that none of us have time to waste. So let's assume we pre-contemplated some of the issues in our lives, and then we're at a place where we're going to make a decision. I am going to decide that I am going to go to the gym on a regular basis. I am going to make a decision that I'm going to get on one of the dating sites and that I am finally ready to find a healthy love relationship. So the decision follows, marked by the intention, of course, to do something. We can pre-contemplate and then we can make a decision, but unless we follow through with some action, nothing is going to happen. I wish, I want, I hope, but we do need to be committed to actually doing something. So then it is followed by the action stage. The actual concrete behaviors are learned and performed to transform the decision into tangible operations. And in the maintenance phase, skills are deployed and processes are engaged to sustain the initial changes over time. Because people will say, oh, well, I want to do something, and they may begin a task. They may begin something new, but somewhere along the line, they're having some difficulties sustaining that action decision. Now, relapse, of course, and we all relapse, should be considered the sixth stage. It's a nearly inevitable part of the process of changing, okay? Because, you know, we try something and we get all really excited about doing something new, and yet in real life, we are, for the most part, most of us are going to have a relapse. So it is nearly inevitable, and we should not beat ourselves up. So after return to the old behaviors, and hopefully we are aware of the old behaviors that don't work for us, people then make a decision to resume their active strategies of coping, facilitating, and moving forward. And the thing is it's very common to blame oneself for a fall, you know, over-engaging in self-denigration, and it's rarely helpful. In fact, it is never helpful, because the important thing is to take a look back to notice where you fell and what caused the stumble. And what I like to do with patients that I'm treating is not so much to look at the stumble, but I like to engage in conversation and talk about what was going on, what conditions were present when things were going well. And I think that's really, really important to know that. Was it that you had more family support? You had more friend support? Perhaps you were exercising regularly. Perhaps you were eating better. Perhaps you were getting a lot more sleep. So I think it's important to not beat ourselves up and not just focus on, oh my goodness, why is it that we failed the task? Rather than to get back on, it's like, you know, when young children are learning to ride a bike, they're going to fall off a lot. And hopefully the parents are going to be able to be patient enough and to say, look at when you sit in a certain way, when your legs are in a certain place, then you are able to ride the bicycle well. So again, changes, it's always difficult for all of us. And the temptation, of course, is constant to fall back into old and familiar patterns of thinking and behaving. And creating a new path, I mean, it really does take proactive effort and much repetition before it feels comfortable. And the reality, of course, is that I encourage you that you don't need to do all of this or even any of this on your own. You know, I talk a lot about professional athletes because, as many of you know who've been listening to the show now, today is show 284. I can hardly believe this is the 284th Ask Beattie show here on the Progressive Radio Network. So, as you know, I mean, I competed nationally in tennis and in badminton for my entire life as a child. And I could never have done it on my own. I was fortunate. My father was my coach, and we trained really, really hard so that I would be able to, you know, improve as much as I possibly could. And there was no quick fixes. And I remember, you know, my dad would say to me all the time, "Look, honey, you know, today you struck out just like the baseball players do on the field. But tomorrow, and I can just hear his voice, you know, the sun hopefully is going to come out. And tomorrow you might be able to hit a home run." Now, of course, it just didn't happen on its own. There was coaching. There was practice. There was repetition. There was relapse. All of these different things happened. But again, when you have people, when you have supportive people around you, and of course, that is something that is so, so critical. And if you're not lucky enough to have a family, your own biological family, then I think it's incumbent upon all of us to reach out and find family surrogates, friends, supportive communities. If you happen to be religious, you know, maybe you can find people in church or in synagogues or in mosques or in groups or at any of the, you know, the 12-step programs so that you can create your own support system. And in fact, you know, I was looking at some of the research. Because I'm always looking at research and I always want to be able to let you know some of the latest findings and some of the latest research studies. And there were 10 things that we all need to do, and this is evidence-based research, that really does help to improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships. And for those of you who are listening live right now, you should just listen and you should be honest with yourself and ask yourself, kind of check it all off, check off the 10 various different things to do and see where you rate. So if we're talking about diet, and of course, Gary Null talks about diet every single day, 365 days of the year. But he's not talking about this in a vacuum. The studies are clear. Plant-based diets, fruits, vegetables, grains, fish, nuts are absolutely critical foods to maintain and sustain good health. So be honest with yourself. How many of you, especially, you know, so many of you listen to Gary Null every day, are really on and have been committed to plant-based diets, the fruits, the vegetables, the grains, because we know this. This isn't something new. And yet I find that it's very, very easy. And sometimes I do this myself, where I make excuses. Oh, well, you know, forget the fruits today or forget the vegetables. And yet it really makes a difference, not just physically, but emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. So it is really about being committed to doing the things that are in our best interest. You know, there was an article that I also found about people in Okinawa in Japan. And I was fascinated by this. The people in Okinawa, they live the longest. So what is it that they're doing so that they live longer than almost anyone on Earth? And I'm really interested in living as long as I possibly can. So what is it that people in Okinawa do? Well, this Japanese region, they have the highest proportion of people over 100 years old, and they are ridiculously healthy. So what did the studies find? They found that the residents have among the longest lifespans, and the islands have the highest rates of centenarians in the world. Two-thirds of those who reached 100 were still living independently. I mean, it's amazing, at the age of 97, according to one study. So Okinawans also have been convinced that their diet, here we go again, that their diet is a key component. So the traditional local diet, rich in vegetables, here we go again, vegetables, soy products, and seafood, was highlighted by scientists from the Eat Lancet Commission in January of last year as one that closely resembled their planetary health diet. Guidelines for a diet that worked well for human health and for reducing the environmental impact of our food choices. So widely used foods in Okinawa include sweet potatoes, which I love. I need to buy some today, actually. Green leafy or yellow root vegetables, tofu, bitter melon, and modest amounts of seafood, lean meat, fruit, and tea. So a typical meal might be miso soup. I don't know about you. I have not had miso soup in years and years. I used to love it. Vegetable stir fry with a side dish of seafood and an accompaniment of freshly brewed jasmine tea. So overall, it is a low calorie, high carbohydrate, mainly due to the sweet potatoes, moderate protein, and nutrient-rich diet with sparse amounts of meat, refined grains, sugar, and dairy. So, I mean, I think that that's so interesting. And I think that, again, we know so much. There is so much access these days to the latest research in every single area of life. And we need to really take it all in and do the things that scientists have found that are really in our best interest. Now, of course, over and above diet, I mean, diet is not the whole story. The people in Okinawa had strong social networks. You know, here we go again. Strong emotional social networks. They also had a purpose. And I think it is so important for all of us every single day, every single morning to wake up and have a purpose. You know, not just to waste the time and watch TV and go shopping and spending our time on Facebook and Twitter and other social media. What is our purpose? And I know during some of the most challenging times of my life, knowing that I had a purpose as a psychotherapist, as a sex therapist, and also as a mother, it really, really made a difference and helped me get through some of the challenges that I've had in my own life. And yes, everybody needs to know that, yes, therapists also have challenges. Other things that really made a difference for the people in Okinawa was that they felt that they were making a difference and that they felt that they were a part of a community of sharing and of giving with one another, so that there is absolutely sufficient evidence to support the fact that we need strong, strong social connections. But what else? What else was discovered by scientists about the things that we need to do every day that really do improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships? Well, I have piles and piles of paper in front of me about all the research findings about exercise, how important exercise is not only to our bodies, but to our well-being. Changing your diet can help damp down depression. Exercise can help damp down depression. And exercise is an all-natural treatment to fight depression. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And in the new year, I think that so many people, you know, they'll say, one day or someday, I know that I should be exercising on a regular basis. And I think that we make a lot of excuses. And I think that laziness is a part of it. But when we know that there are certain things that really do matter, that really do help us feel better about our lives and about ourselves and about our relationships, you know, you kind of wonder, what is it that stops people from doing what is in their best interest? And that's one of the things that I really try to do in my own practice, is to motivate and to inspire people to take a look at the things that we know that can really, really make a difference in your life. So how are you doing so far? Are you on base with a plant-based diet, the fruits, the vegetables, the grains, the fish? What about the exercise? It's a new year. It's almost 1 week into the new year. Have you gotten to the gym? And if you haven't wanted to join a gym, have you made a commitment and have you acted on the commitment to walk every single day, regardless of how cold it may be outside? So you put on a couple of extra sweaters and you take that very, very important walk around the block. I mean, not only are you going to feel better, but it really does make a difference in the quality of our lives. And we also know about the importance of the weight training. And there are a lot of people, and I haven't been one of them, I have to say, you know, who really get great benefits from yoga and from meditation and from acupuncture. So these are things. These are evidence-based research findings that tell us what things can really help us feel better about ourselves and about our lives. Number seven. Having supportive people in your life. And, you know, every week I ask you to kind of take a look around at who is in your life. And are the people who are in your life, are they supportive? Are they loving? Are they there for you? And I'm not talking about being there for you 24 hours a day. Are they respecting of you? Can you trust them? Are they trustworthy? So you have to take an honest look of who stays and who goes. And I'm not suggesting that because people have issues and because there are problems, and there are always going to be problems in the best of relationships, in your friend relationships, in romantic relationships, in family relationships. But what you want to do is you want to have people, if you want to have these people in your life who are willing and capable and wanting to acknowledge and address and resolve whatever issues come up in your relationship. And for me, and you've heard me say this every single week for the past 4 years, is that for me, I want zero toxicity in my life. Not just the chemicals that we talk about, the environmental chemicals. I don't want to have any toxic people in my life. And that includes friends and family, because toxic people will kill us one way or another. And I'm not talking about physically, although in toxic relationships, we certainly know that domestic violence statistics and murders by intimate partners, as an example, and this was something that I read in the New York Times over the weekend, they actually are on the rise. But I wasn't talking, you know, about physical toxicity. I was talking about people who are just poison to you. So what do you need to do? They're not going to change unless they want to change, unless they care enough to change. So you need to give yourself permission to extricate yourself from any and all toxic relationships with people who make you crazy. And that is actually something that you are able to do. And, you know, I was reading, you know, the Serenity Prayer, you know, the AA Serenity Prayer. And I think it's a really good reminder for all of us to be able to accept the things I cannot change. I can't change my history. I can't change the family that I was born into. I can't change anything that happens 60 seconds ago, 1 second ago. But it's the courage to change the things that I can. And that needs, you know, sometimes perspective. You can't change the past. The past is done and over with. But there's so many things that we can do today to change the present and to change how we are going to navigate our current journey. And of course, the wisdom to know the difference. You know, so to be able to spend time and dwelling on what happened and what didn't happen. Yes, it's important to be able to understand those things. And I believe to be able to emotionally process all of the historical issues that really did get in the way of your life. But those things, they're done. They're finished. And we don't have time. We don't have time in our lives to obsess about all of that day in and day out. So the past is gone. You can't do anything about the past. But today is a new day. And there are many, many things that you and I can do today to improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships. And we do need to know the difference about the things that we can't change and the things that we absolutely can change as well. So on my little list here, the plant-based diets, the exercise, the supportive people in our lives. We also have to talk about more about the importance of socializing and interacting. And I was reading a piece by Arianna Huffington, who of course had a physical breakdown a few years ago. And she realized she needed to stop. She really needed to stop working 20 hours a day. And the importance of sleep and the importance of taking naps. So again, there's a long list of things. These aren't things that we don't know about. These are things that we do know about. And it is really a question of, are we going to embrace the things that we know that can actually make our lives better? And of course, eliminating sugar and soda and alcohol and nicotine. And finally, you know, I was looking at how many hours a day. The studies, of course, are now showing, we now have the data, that people are spending on social media, on the cell phones and on the computers. And it's really important for our well-being, emotionally and physically, to try to really minimize the social media and the cell phones and the computers as much as we possibly can, and to find a balance between work and fun. And I wish I could see all of you who are listening to the show right now, and I really wonder how you are doing on this little test, how you're actually rating, how well you are doing. And if for some reason your score is not what you would like it to be, the real question is, what are you going to do about it? And I don't suggest, of course, that you are going to tackle every single thing today and all at the same time. But you may want to write down your priority goals and start chipping away at them. In fact, there was a really, really interesting piece in Psychology Today, in the latest edition of Psychology Today. And I loved it. The headline was "An Essential Mental Health Check-In." And this is what the author says. Every year, and of course it's true, we schedule appointments with our doctors and our dentists to make sure that our body and teeth are strong and healthy. But doesn't our mental health merit the same attention? I think it does. Of course it does. And although an annual psychological checkup may not be feasible or necessary for everyone in the current healthcare system, individuals should still feel empowered to explore. We need to feel empowered to explore our mental health well-being. So here's an exam. I'm going to give you a test. And you have to tell me how you score on it. A self-exam like the one that I'm going to give you in no way substitutes for professional assessment or treatment or diagnosis. But considering a wide-ranging set of questions can provide a framework in which to take inventory of your inner life, providing the opportunity to probe, reflect, and grow. So the real question is, how are you doing? So the first area in this article that they want us to look at is mood. And here's the statement. I have days when I feel down, like everybody in the world, by the way. But over the past year, I haven't experienced a period of depressed mood that lasted longer than 2 weeks or negatively affected my work or relationships. True or false? There's enough going on in my life to keep me absorbed, and I have interests or hobbies I engage in regularly. So if that's you, sounds like you're doing really, really well. Remembering, of course, that in the best of situations, in the best of relationships, there are going to be ups and downs. The second area in this mental health check-in test is relationships. So here's the question. I have people who care about me and people whom I care about and can depend on. Yes or no? Do you? And if not, then there's going to be, of course, a task that you're going to have to take on to try to engage with loving, healthy, supportive people. I express my love to the people closest to me. Do you? You know, so often we get into these situations where we just kind of take people for granted, people who are close to us, people who really love us. And it is important. It's really important to express my love and express my appreciation and express my gratitude to the people in our lives who we really care about. So do you do that? You know, some people will say, well, I'm not expressive and I'm not affectionate. Well, if you're going to have close, good relationships, you need to find ways that may not be my ways, but your ways to be able to express the love, the appreciation, the gratitude, the affection. So do you have at least one person with whom you can share most of your personal thoughts and feelings? And that's important, to be able to be real. I know that in my own life, thank goodness I can really be real, the good, the bad, the ugly, with my husband, Jim. And I do. I have a couple of close friends, just really two or three at most, who I can call up and I can say, I'm having a bad day, or I am worried about this, or I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to achieve, you know, whatever it is that I'm working on. And I think that we all need people who we can really, really be honest with and authentic with, and we don't have to be performing. And that's a gift. And I hope that all of you have at least one person in your life who you can share your innermost feelings with. And, you know, hopefully a significant other. Now, if you're looking at your professional and financial stability, you need to ask yourself this question. Do you feel like a contributing member of society? You know, what are you doing? And it's not about giving money and it's not about being rich, but how are you contributing? You know, I have somebody that I see in my practice, and I've been working with her for about a year and a half, who's very involved with Make-A-Wish. And she doesn't have children, and she doesn't have a family, and she doesn't have a husband. And this, for her, has been something that has made an enormous difference, of course, not only for the children that she is involved with, but for her as well. And with your workplace, hopefully it is not physically or emotionally toxic. Do you find your work interesting enough and reasonably fulfilling? You know, hopefully you do. But if you don't, and of course you have to pay the rent or you have to pay the mortgage, but then the question really becomes, you know, what are you going to do if you find yourself in a field in these days? I mean, people change careers just multiple times. You know, years ago, you know, people, they received a gold watch when they turned 65, but it's different now. So if the career that you're currently in or the job that you're currently in is not working for you, maybe it's time to see a career counselor. Maybe it's time to take some classes. Maybe it's time to look at some options. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck. And you don't want to be having the same conversation with yourself in 5 or 10 years from now. So that when we come across the challenges, we need to then figure out, what do I need to do to somehow find a way to navigate the challenges? And again, you don't need to do this on your own. I mean, we see all kinds of experts. If there are legal issues, we'll talk to lawyers. If there are financial problems, people will talk to financial advisors. If there are car troubles, we talk to our mechanics. So we don't need to be experts. We can't possibly be experts in all of the different areas in our lives. So when problems start to surface, you know, for me, it's about problem solution. What is the problem? What are some of the possible causes of the problem? What are some of the possible solutions? And then you come to a point where you're able to really boil down what solutions are going to work best for you. And of course, we can't do this if we're running around 24 hours a day, and if we're on our computers and we're on our phones. And this is why, whether or not we're talking about sex, whether we're talking about relationships, whether we're talking about substance abuse issues, it's really important to just kind of stop and do an honest inventory with ourselves about our life, taking an honest look at what is working and what is not working. And if you are not sure about where to begin to get out of either self-destructive pattern or a self-sabotaging pattern or a destructive pattern, that's the time. That's the time you can reach out to somebody like myself who just, you know, by having conversations and getting a second opinion, I mean, it can really, really help you and does change the trajectory of your life. You know, other things in this article that they wanted you to consider was temper. Ask yourself this question. Is my temper usually under control? Do I use physical aggression to intimidate others? Do people often tell me to calm down, or do they see me as hot-headed? To take a look at your own affect. Do you like the way you relate to other people? Your children, your friends, your boyfriends, your girlfriends, your colleagues, your family members. Is this something that you may need to do a little bit of work on? What about your physical health? Is your health adequate? Have you had a physical with blood work done in the past year? In fact, my physical is going to be next week. I have a doctor who, even though fortunately I'm very, very physically healthy, he insists that every single year I have the blood work done just to make sure that everything is okay. Do I walk at least 30 minutes a day most days? Am I eating well? Am I binging, or am I, you know, eating things that are really not good for me? Too much sugar, too much soda, too much alcohol. So you're taking a really honest inventory of your life, and this mental health inventory includes looking at things like sleep. People are simply not getting enough sleep. So do you have difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep? We need to get at least 7 or 8 hours of sleep every single night. Is that happening? Is it happening? Do you sleep regular hours? And if you don't, there are a lot of people who are on shift work. I mean, are you finding ways to compensate for the fact that you may be working in the middle of the night so that you're going to have to find ways that you are going to still be able to get sufficient sleep? The area of what this author calls self-care. Am I able to relax and take it easy? She says, I know family and friends are generally more important than work, and my actions reflect that. She says, I take an hour a day to relax and do things that I enjoy. I spend a full day not working at least once a week. So what are you doing, and how are you doing in the area of self-care? Are you being good to yourself? And it doesn't mean spending a lot of money. It means just making sure that you are taking good care of yourself. Because if you don't take good care of yourself, I really believe we're not able to take such wonderful care of other people. And here again, she talks about purpose. I feel as if there must be some sort of purpose to my life, even if I'm not sure what it might be. Do you feel that way? Do you feel that even though you may not be sure of what the purpose to your life is, what it's really all about, are you on a journey to find out? You know, and that's something that's really important. And if you're looking at goals, do you feel that you are on track, whether or not it is 2020 or any other year? I mean, do you feel that the goals, do you have very specific goals? And I actually suggest that people write them out and prioritize their goals, whether or not it may be finding a partner, whether or not it may be considering a move. You know, what's important? What are your priorities? And once you're able to really define for yourself what I want and need, what I don't want and need. Then, of course, the question becomes, what are the things that I am going to need to do, the action that I am going to need to take that hopefully will get me to where I want to go? And all of this requires, you know, as I'm talking about all of this right now, there's a lot of things to consider. And this is why we need to find the time. We need to find a quiet space where we don't have any distractions of any kind to really be able to sit back and reassess and continuing to assess our life, where we're at and where we want to go and what's missing and what do I need to do or what are some of the things that I need to do to really get the things and to get the quality of life that I am looking for. And again, this is why it's so, so helpful to be able to have, whether it's a trusted friend or whether or not it is a trusted therapist, to be able to help you figure out all of these things. You know, the author talks about, you know, a yearly mental health check-in. I talk about a weekly mental health check-in just to make sure that we're really on track, that we're really on a path that will hopefully get us to a place where we really want to go. Over the weekend, I read a piece that was very upsetting, and the headline was "Murders by Intimate Partners Are on the Rise," the study finds. And Jim and I, we were talking about this morning. And of course, he's a sociologist and host of the Radical Imagination on MNN TV. He was, you know, talking about how from his vantage point, this is a multifaceted problem. I mean, and of course, it's true. And what is also true is that the patriarchal culture, unfortunately, still persists despite all of the inroads that we have made with Me Too and Time's Up in the last few years. But I wanted to share some of these statistics with you, and I wanted to give you my own analysis about the situation over and above the patriarchal culture that still persists. Homicides by intimate partners are increasing, driven primarily, this is according to a woman whose name is Laura Holson, who writes for the New York Times, driven primarily by gun violence after almost four decades of decline, according to a recent study looking at gender and homicide. So the number of victims rose to almost 2,300 in 2017, which is a 19% increase from 2014. And overall, gun-related domestic killings increased by 26% from 2010 to 2017. And Dr. Fox, who was one of the researchers, said that this was a cause for alarm, of course. In 2017, 926 of the almost 1,600 women murdered by their partners were killed with guns. So here we are. We're going to be focusing on gun control, which, of course, I am completely in favor of legislation and gun control, which the National Rifle Association, of course, opposes any and all legislation. But wearing my psychotherapist hat, I also think another very, very important dimension is something that we need to look at. When I did my research with the 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut area, I devised, as you all know, a 10-step formula based on the research and my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, that teaches people how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before you commit. And I remember when the first the book first came out, I was interviewed by people all over the country, and they would say, Beattie, what are the two most important ingredients that make or break relationships? And invariably, my answer was emotional communication and problem solving. And this is the thing. When we are assessing our partners, and yes, we do need to assess our partners, and my research found that it takes close to a year, not 90 days, not a month, not 2 weeks, not to look over at somebody and say that I'm madly in love and this is going to be my soulmate forever, to really, really find out who somebody is and isn't. And since ups and downs and conflict are a part of all relationships, all healthy relationships, this is the time during this period of a year when you are assessing your partner on all kinds of different dimensions to find out how your partner deals with conflict, how your partner deals with upset and disappointment and anger and pain. And so that if you're seeing somebody who is putting his fist through a wall or screaming or yelling or hitting the dog or avoiding or denying and refusing to talk about what's going on, I'm not suggesting that you're going to be able to accurately predict that this person is going to become physically violent. But what I certainly can tell you is that the signs are there that you are going to be putting yourself into a very, very dangerous kind of a relationship. And when we talk about abuse, you know, most people think about abuse in terms of physical abuse or physical violence. When I talk about abuse, I talk about emotional abuse, I talk about verbal abuse, I talk about psychological abuse, and I also talk about physical abuse. And this is why we have very, very clear indications and indicators when we are going through the assessment process with our partner, with somebody who we maybe hope that we're going to fall madly in love with and we're going to live happily ever after. We need to know how people are going to react when situations become dicey, because dicey, my friends, is absolutely the norm for most relationships, for most good relationships. There are always going to be ups and downs. So this is why, yes, we can talk about gun control, which is really, really important. But I believe, and I've talked to thousands of people about this when I give my Stop Domestic Violence Before It Starts workshops around the country, that there are always signs. There are always danger signs. There are always red flags. And when we're feeling needy and when we're feeling lonely, it is a tendency for many people, if not the majority of people, to really choose to look the other way. So that if you're in a relationship, I'm really hoping you're going to read my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I hope you are going to take the assessment process seriously so that you're really going to know who your partner is and who your partner is not. And I encourage you to not stay away from issues that are conflictual, from issues that are tough to talk about. Because if you're going to be living with somebody, if you're going to have a real relationship with somebody, the tough issues and the things that are difficult to talk about are going to be a part of your life. And you do need to know how your partner is going to respond. And people can only pretend for a while. And that's why staying away from conflict and staying away from difficult subjects, it actually does not give you a real opportunity to find out who your partner is or is not. It's so easy when you're talking about, oh, where are we going to go for dinner? Or are we going to go to a game? Or are we going to go to a hockey game? Or are we going to go to a baseball game? Or are we going to go to a Broadway show? That is easy. That is really easy. But when you're talking perhaps about, you know, how are you going to raise children? If you're talking about money, if you're talking about sex, if you're talking about politics, if you're talking about different ways of communicating and different ways of dealing with each other, that's when you really get an opportunity to find out the reality of what kinds of interactions you are going to be able to have with your partner when things get tough. Well, I can hardly believe this. My producer just looked at me and said that there's a couple of minutes left. I can hardly believe where this hour has come and gone. I have a lot of other things that I want to talk with you about, but fortunately, I have that opportunity every Monday afternoon live from 3 to 4 here on the Ask Beauty Show on the Progressive Radio Network. And for those of you who are unable to listen to the whole show or unable to listen to the show live, you can always go to the archives, the Ask Beauty archives.